the show.
Hey everyone, and welcome to this week's show. I'm your host, Lisa Anderson. I have got Ted and Sarah with me. Hi, Ted and Sarah.
Hey, hey Lisa. So good to be back again.
Good to have you. Thank you. Relatives through marriage. Mm-hmm. So that's how you can get on as part of the Boundless team, people. Just marry into someone on the team.
To be clear, we are not married to each other.
I'm Ted's sister-in-law. He's married to my sister, Ashley. That's true, yeah. Just for anybody who's not familiar with the dynamics here. Uh-huh.
Exactly. Sarah is Ashley's sister.
And she is still available, just to let y'all know.
She is. Ted, you're supposed to be working more aggressively on that.
She is available, man. Yeah. Step up.
Exactly. So that's
this is
good.
Awkward for me. Okay.
That's okay. You'll get over it. Okay. So we are going to talk in today's roundtable about utilizing the time that we have this summer wisely.
Summertime.
Will Smith. Please.
I did that for you.
Thanks. Yeah. Summertime. Because, and here's why, I've talked many times, let's be honest, folks, I talk about it all the time, how much I love the summer and I love longer days. I love the sunlight. I am already bummed because, we're airing this week, but yesterday, Monday was the longest day of the year.
No way.
Yes. I am not way.
Is that the solstice or something?
Summer solstice. And right. I am now already mildly depressed because that has passed us, which means that the summer.
You're too sensitive, day. Lisa.
I am. If that I'm often accused you. Of my sensitivity. Yes. But here's how it went down, because it's just very, to me, I just love it. And I just love the daylight and everything. And in fact, so much so that every year I have a little ritual that I try to be up at sunrise on the longest day of the year and not go to bed until sunset. So it's a long day for me. And actually this year, now I couldn't do it yesterday because it's a work day, but Sunday morning I roped some friends into hiking Mount Cutler with me prior to sunrise so that then we could sit on the rocks at the top of the mountain and
watch the sunrise. Did you arrange them
in
the shape of Stonehenge or something?
We didn't, but no, I made it. I made a big deal out of it. We met at my house at 4:45 a.m. in time to get over there, hike up, and
sounds
be there
like
by
fun.
Sunrise at 5:40.
Wow.
So we did it. We brought a hymnal up. We brought a Bible up. We read some psalms. We sang some hymns, and then we hiked back down, had breakfast at my place.
Now, you didn't defraud any guys during this process, did you?
I don't. How do you defraud guys by hiking? I don't know.
Okay.
I don't think so. I think we were all above board. I think it was good. So then we hiked back down, had breakfast at my place, and went to church. And we're in the pews by 9 a.m. So
awesome.
It was very fun. And that for me was just a good example of how to kick off not only the Lord's Day, but a summer looking at it intentionally and saying, you know, what does this summer hold and what does this look like?
That's
and
good.
You know, I mean, I had a summer when I was in junior high where I was a latchkey kid. I watched 8 hours of TV a day.
Ooh, that sounds like Mott. He's not here to defend himself.
When I look back on that summer, I just think, what a colossal waste of time. And the next summer, my parents shipped me off to my sister's house in Minnesota, and I did a lot of stuff. But I just think that a lot of people, whether you're a college student who like has this big chunk of time now in the summer and wants to use it wisely, or whether you're, you know, a workaday person who's trying to maximize your daylight in the evenings and on weekends, there are a lot of things that we can do to avail ourselves of, you know, just a good summer opportunity. I know, Ted, you've done that in the past.
Yeah, you're right. This different seasons provide different opportunities for different things. I mean, winter and the snow, and there are all sorts of fun things to do during that time. But summer, you know, I'm thinking back, and some summers I've just had to work. But this one summer in undergrad, I spent a week with my church's young adults group in Mexico. And that one week changed my life. You know, I went back for another 9 months after that, ended up studying international communication in Spanish and spent a couple months in South America. That first 1 week excursion not only helped the people we were, you know, sent to minister to, but it changed my life. And then last year during the summer, I had this sense that I should work to volunteer for VBS, and I don't particularly like little kids that aren't related to me.
Mm-hmm.
But I had the sense that I should do it, so I signed up and took the time off from work and did it. And the first few days were really quite enjoyable. it got really exhausting though. Something that I'm doing this year that's not directly related to summer, but it's kind of inspired by whatever, the freshness of this time of year. We finally finished our little basement theater. Have a nice Integra sound system and Paradigm speakers and an Optima 1080p projector. And it's kind of fun.
Spoiler alert, folks. This is going to be Ted justifying the purchase of his home theater system. Okay, go ahead.
Oh, yes. It's taken like 3 years to finally piece it together. Mm-hmm. But so you're right. I did maybe perhaps feel some obligation to use it to minister to people. So this idea went through my head to invite over couples, allow them to just go in the basement, watch a movie, whatever they want on our Blu-ray or whatever, and have popcorn and pause if they need to use the restroom. And then meanwhile, upstairs, we'd be watching their kids for them, you know? So
that's a very nice idea.
Idea. That is very fun.
So, and it's low impact on us. We're just sort of babysitting for a couple hours, and it's low impact on them because it's not like they have to find a babysitter. Mm-hmm. They're not worried that they're going to have to send their kids to somebody they don't know that's, you know, 2 miles away. So that's kind of one fresh kind of thing we're doing for this summer.
That's really fun. That's cool. Sarah, how about you?
Well, when I knew this was the topic for the podcast, I wasn't sure exactly what I was going to say because this summer my first number one plan is, well, in general, you know, is to enjoy it, to enjoy the summer sunny weather. And that doesn't sound too deep or too spiritual or anything, but we had a very long winter here in Colorado. So besides, you know, my regular plan of loving God, loving my family, being productive, I want to enjoy this summertime. We have a pool that we can go to. So I'm just really enjoying the weather. And then I'm helping out at Focus. So I guess that's part of my intentionality for the summer. I finished up some video projects. So right now I just kind of want to break from all that intense editing and things. So I'm not sure what the summer holds, but I'm just, you know, trusting God for some good surprises. I love good surprises. So I like to kind of, you know, just wait and see what God will do. And I know that doesn't sound very intentional.
Oh, that's cool. I had, you know, I was thinking of last summer. I had actually last summer a very well-lived summer. I really got into hiking, and I started hiking with friends to the point where I would hike 3 or 4 times a week, whether after work. And I mean, we live in Colorado, so it's obviously accessible and easy. But then longer hikes on the weekends as well. And you know, it just dawned on me now as I think back on that, a lot of them were my friends from church. We would go out together, and I got, and a lot of times it was me and a bunch of guys because either the women in my acquaintance couldn't make it or they weren't really into hiking and stuff. So I hiked with all these guys last summer, and we would get into discussions on, usually like during the course of the week, we would discuss what had been preached that Sunday. So we would discuss the sermons and just how they would apply to our lives. And I still remember some of those conversations with these guys and just how, you know, I'm not the first person to say, and then I just drew this out of him and whatever. But, you know, you don't think that guys are going to go into that. But really, as we just started, you know, hiking along and just talking about, what do you think about this? It ended up being really, really cool.
There's something about nature and fresh air that does facilitate good conversation. Like
It was just cool. And now this summer, you know, I've mentioned that next week I'm leaving for Europe. And so that's going to be cool. But even as I look at that trip, I'm thinking, for example, I will be in Norway with all of my relatives, none of them whom are saved. And so what am I going to do intentionally to really evidence Jesus Christ in my life to them, you know, and not make it just about, okay, what are you going to show me in Norway, or let's just hang out and do this family reunion stuff, but how can I really get into good conversations with them that ultimately will be not that I have to be all like 4 spiritual laws on them or whatever, but how can I be a life giver to them and the things that I say and the ways that I say them, and how can I encourage them and just start to build those relationships. Another idea that I thought of that is actually I'm invited this Friday night to a coworker's house. This is a cool thing they're doing. Ted, your theater thing reminded me of this. Mm-hmm. I got this invitation from them, and it says, I think it said like moat dinner or something, M-O-A-T. And I'm like, what in the world is that? And I looked on the back and it said Mother of All Tables. And his wife built a table out of this old fence. Like they knocked their fence down in their backyard. And so it is this huge, just plank table made out of a fence. And every Friday night through the summer, they're going to invite a random assortment of people over to come and eat around their table and just get to know one another. And that just to me reflects getting back to that concept of community and what it really looks like to be in one another's lives, get off of Facebook, get off of texting, stop being all, you know, distant and weird and random and stuff, and really start gathering together over a meal and see what happens. And I think summer is a great opportunity to do that. So,
right.
Yeah, that really is interesting what you said a little earlier about conversation in the mountains. And then, because that's not really something you can do in the winter. I mean, you can put on your big boots and your heavy overcoat and sort of trudge through the snow, but you don't necessarily like go out and for a stroll and a chat. You know, and like maybe that's what'll happen in Norway. The weather's gonna be pretty decent when you're there.
Yeah, it's gonna be the constant sun. The sun will not set while I'm there.
All right, so you can have some long 24 hours conversations
while we eat fish, which I can't stand.
I would just like to restate what I said earlier, because I guess honestly, as a single person, I want to be intentional about relationships this summer. Mm-hmm. So I feel like that's more the honest answer.
Yeah.
You know, first love God, and then be intentional about a relationship, but then trust God with the results. So that's my real deep down honest answer.
That's good. I actually will. In fact, this actually played out this week already. Last Tuesday, I went hiking with a friend. I'm hiking with her again tonight. And last Tuesday itself, we had a great conversation while hiking, to the point where during the course of it ended up being about a 3-hour hike. But we both had the opportunity to challenge one another, to get to know more about one another that we probably wouldn't be able to do in the context of just, you know, buzzing around and keeping up with our lives. And to really, I think, take some things away that were thought provoking and stuff that we could say, you know what, I'm going to go back. I'm going to go down the mountain. I'm going to go back into my work week, back into my life. And what am I going to do with what we just talked about? And how is that going to change this week and my summer and my life, ultimately? I think just good conversations can be had doing that. So I don't know, y'all. I think you need to write into us and tell us, editor@boundless.org, what some ideas you have for the summer.
Something new, something fresh for the summer.
Because I think that we can encourage one another in that and just kind of prompt one another with good ideas so that we are living more intentionally, being more, you know, how... I was just studying Romans 12 last night with friends, and that whole idea of, you know, loving one another. What does it look like to love one another intentionally and to, you know, not keep a record of wrongs and to not, you know, just that whole idea of if we really live Christ-like, you know, intentions in a way that he would have us do that, I think it can transform ourselves and the people around us. So good thoughts, you guys.
Sweet.
Father, we've proved we know not what we do. We're spinning round and round, wondering what is up and what is down. Ashamed, confused by twisted things we do. You came to change the ways, clean the stains of the crooked man. It's time we listen to what you're asking for. Time we shine.
Everyone, we've got another culture segment this week for you, and another exciting one, I think. This is going to be really fun. This is actually something that Mott came up with, if you can believe it, because Mott and his wife were at Next this year, the Next conference. You all know that we talk about that here on the show a lot. The charismatic Calvinists, as I call them, out there with Sovereign Grace out on the East Coast. And we have got with us by phone Shai Lin and Stephen the Levite. So you guys, welcome.
Thank you.
Okay. Well, you guys are, now this is a fun interview because we've actually talked, I was just telling you before we came, you know, on the line before we started taping, that it wasn't too long ago that I interviewed Thabiti Anyabwile. So I interviewed him. I've interviewed Mark Dever in the past. And then I've talked with some hip hop artists. So it was not too long ago I interviewed Lecrae. And so we just have a lot of fun here on The Boundless Show doing probably non-stereotypical focus on the family interviews. So that, you know, the next step for you guys, we'll, you know, we'll get you on the daily broadcast. We'll just be like, you know what, parents, families, here we go. So though we may have to give a little bit of background into the world of hip hop music for most of that listenership, but I'm all about it. And I always love hearing great hip hop and rap artists because I love the genre. I'm very eclectic in my music tastes. But I love it, and I just love hearing about new projects that are out here. So I want to talk.
Do you rap, Lisa?
You know what? I try to rap. I do.
Oh yeah?
Yeah, I try to, and I'm more like, my problem is, see, when I listen to regular, like, mainstream rap, it's like either I can't keep up with bleeping out what needs to be bleeped out, or I have to go find radio edits or cleaned up versions, and I'm, you know, but I like to, yeah, I've tried to rap to the glory of God, man. I mean, I'm in a PCA church out here in Colorado Springs, and we do no rapping, and it's a disservice to the congregation, I feel.
I think you should send us a demo.
I think you guys need to come out and do a concert. We're going to be, the only thing is, you're going to have to bring all of your own equipment because all we have is a big old organ. So unless you guys can cut an entire album with an organ, you're going to have to just bring your own stuff. So, and all the Boundless listeners know this, how much I love rap and hip hop and hard rock. Let's be honest. I'm going to put that in there too. But also a big fan of Southern gospel. So I feel that I really keep both sides of the aisle happy with my musical tastes.
Yeah, that's good.
That's how.
Good.
And so
Stephen the Levite, he loves, hardcore, like Christian hardcore music.
Oh yeah.
Like metal.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. No, that's awesome. And then some of the old school stuff too. You know, I mean, I've talked with, who was it? I can't remember when I was talking with Lecrae or who it was, but we were talking about the old, like, you know, PID from back in the day and some of those, some of those folks. So some of that. And then, you know, on the rock side, I'm going to be honest and say that I did listen to Hell with the Devil coming into work the other day. So there was some Striper there. There was some. I'm just an equal opportunity music person as far as that goes. So, okay, but I've got to say, so I got the downloadable. I downloaded the church, and I go and start looking through the individual tracks, and I'm like, and this is like no context. Mott just came back from Next, and he's like, okay, check this out, and I'm like, these are all like nine marks of a healthy church. I said, what is? Are these like sermons? Are these like? And then I realize it's like you guys doing songs off of all of these different principles. And I'm just like, what in the world? And so I start listening and I'm just cracking up because I'm actually listening to a song called Expository Preaching. I mean, this is, so then I like turned it up in the office and I made everyone like come over and listen to it. And we were just totally like, it was awesome. And then I'm like, okay, and now here's this song called Membership. And here's this song called Biblical Theology. And so it was just like, it was hilarious, but awesome at the same time. Because we're like, and you guys actually like threw down George Whitfield and Spurgeon. Okay, let's be honest. That blazed me away. I loved it. So I need to know, first of all, you guys, who is it? I think Stephen, you started out in California and ended up in Philly. What, both of you guys just talk about your experience of getting to Philly and how you even got involved with a nine marks kind of understanding of scripture and the role of the church.
Well, for me, yeah, I was in a group called Redeemed Thought. We, you know, we were praying about leaving home, and Philadelphia came up. We prayed about it. 10 days later, we were out here, and I remember meeting Shy and Timothy Brindle and helping DJ Essence actually move into Philadelphia. And, you know, and it just kind of started a relationship. And by the time I started a solo project of my own, it just seemed fit to work with them. So, yeah, so that's kind of how I got involved in the Philadelphia Lamp Mode hip-hop scene. Shy, you want to jump in?
Yeah, I'm born and raised in Philly. And in 1999, the Lord called me to himself and saved me. And basically, I was we basically get into a van and go up and down the East Coast, jump out of the van and do these plays, and try to direct people to Christ. And but the director of that troupe was a big Christian hip-hop fan. And at the time, I was a new believer. I didn't even know that Christian hip-hop existed. Or if it did exist, I would have thought it would be just horrible. Mm-hmm. But he said that he basically introduced me to the Cross Movement, and they were kind of pioneers in terms of theologically driven hip hop, and it just so happened that they were based in Philadelphia as well, and so I went to an album release party and was just amazed when I looked around and saw about 1,000 people who were externally just hip-hop culture, but at the same time just serious about the Lord Jesus Christ. So that was kind of my introduction to kind of the world of Christian hip-hop. And fast forward, I did an interview for the Nine Marks podcast with Mark Dever last summer. And after the interview and speaking with him about some of my future plans for ministry, he suggested that the internship at Capitol Hill Baptist might be a good idea. And so I wound up doing the internship, and just through that series of relationships and talking with the Lampmode, the record label, just thought it might be a good idea to take these ideas concerning the church and then put them into a hip-hop format in order to try to expose some of these ideas to our audience.
Yeah. Well, and it's awesome. Like I said, I played it for my office this morning, and I think about 4 of my coworkers went back and downloaded the whole album after listening to it. Because it really, I mean, not only is it fun and it's just, you know, great, great music, but it's like sitting down and getting a good dose of, you know, doctrine and good solid, you know, understanding of what we're called to as the church in the midst of that. I know you said, okay, so you talked about meeting up with Cross Movement and you realized, oh my word, here are some guys that are actually, you know, doing this music, but are believers and are doing it, and it's a calling and a ministry for them. Was this kind of up to this point, were you guys like, well, you know, maybe I'm going to be an accountant, or maybe I'm going to be, I mean, how did this all of a sudden turn into, I think I'm going to do this, and this is going to become my, you know, this is going to become my ministry?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I would say for me that, at that point, I have a background in the arts and in theater, so I've worked professionally as an actor for a couple of years, so I was actually looking forward to, you know, continue to pursue an acting career, but I started to run into conflicts in terms of some of the, you know, a lot of the roles that I was being offered. I wasn't. It became a conflict with you know, with my faith in the Lord and the things I was being asked to do. So I began to kind of slowly fade out as far as the acting was concerned, and I also just as a believer had a passion for. Just for discipleship and just for growth and the knowledge of the word, and so I knew that I would be involved in ministry somehow, whether that included hip hop or not, I wasn't so sure. But the rap thing just kind of that just came along, and part of it is just being steeped in hip hop culture. You know, rap is just one of those. It's a natural expression, and so to be able to marry the two together just made a lot of sense from my standpoint.
Mm-hmm. For me, it was at the time that I heard of Cross Movement, it was kind of the same thing, like, wow, like these people are actually doing music that sounds good and is Christian, like because, you know, up until that point, there wasn't a lot of good examples of musical excellence in Christian hip hop. And so we were getting dissed on the real world by by, you know, actors and, you know, other random stuff like that. But I think, you know, once we heard of Cross Movement, it gave us some credibility in the art and not just in the church. It definitely played a role in me determining, like, okay, this is possible. Like, I can do this, because I had been rapping for the world before, and I got saved, and I had a lot of friends who were from a more traditional background that kind of demonized Christian hip-hop. Part of me questioned whether or not it was something that God was using. So I remember, for a season of my Christianity, just not writing anything and trying to see whether, like, studying the scriptures to see whether it was something that God actually used. It was just a simple scripture about, using your gifts for God that made me realize, okay, so I'm gifted in this, so I should use it for His glory. So that's kind of what pushed me to start writing for the Lord and to be involved in this. But it was never like, it was even back then, it was never something that I thought I'd be doing, for this big of an audience.
Yeah.
Just something I thought I'd be doing for the fun of it on the side at my church or in my hometown in Temecula. So.
Yeah,
which nobody knows about. But
hey, I have been to Temecula, if you can believe it. I grew up I grew up in the Bay Area, so
okay,
that's where my rap career started. So, but then I ended up at Focus on the Family, and my dream was squelched a little bit. So I have to just host this show and give y'all a platform to continue, the work. So, okay. Well, you guys said, I heard you guys say, or I read something where you describe, what you guys do as an underground hip hop style with a standard of doctrine. And then you also said, and I think this might've been you, Stephen the Levite, who said you have a burden, to help others study the word for themselves. And so I want to know, like, for example, so there's the church CD. I want to know what your passion is for the local church. What is the value of the local church in our culture today?
That is a very important question. I think, I'm not sure too much. I haven't been out in the world enough to see, like, what everybody's saying about the church, but from what I read and from what I hear, there's just a lot of, even the church is dissing the church. They're disrespecting the church. They have bad things to say about the church. And there's, just not a lot of attention on the church. The churches are struggling with the participation of its members. Usually 20% of the congregation is carrying the other 80 on their back. The view is, like, church is cool. It's something I have to do, but I don't necessarily have to be involved in it. If you're doing that, you're one of those Jesus freaks or something along those lines. And even for us, our burden even more so is the lack of attention that the local church gets among other Christian hip-hoppers, because we come from, Christian hip-hop started at a time when, it was being demonized by a lot of churches that were predominantly African-American because of the more traditional background and more, the theological bent of those churches. So in a lot of senses, we had to try to, or at least we thought we had to, go about doing our art without them. What that's breeded is that even now, when it is accepted in the church, we've grown accustomed to functioning as a parachurch organization in and of ourselves, and we've kind of divorced ourselves from the church. We have our own ministry visions, and we don't know how to submit our visions to the vision of a local church. There's a big disconnect between the rapper or the singer or the beat maker and his local church. So that's another part of the issue that burdened me and wanted to get into the topic.
Yeah. Well, and I think too, I mean, it's really when I started attending my current church that I realized the role of the church in accountability, in mentorship. I mean, the value of mentorship. When I was told, when I sat down and I joined my church and they said, so anyway, I mean, this is a paraphrase, obviously, because it was some old dudes that interviewed me. But, you know, it was basically, so anyway, just so you know, we're going to be up in your bit knit. Okay. And I just kind of wanted to do my own thing and kind of consume church. So I was a little bit shocked when I realized that they were actually going to be in my life. And I think that's something that we've lost in the church. In fact, my church, I just got a letter yesterday that our church is going to be basically excommunicating a couple of members this Sunday because of extensive spiritual discipline that has gone on that was not received. And I'm just like, I never had anything like that going on in my life in other churches that I'd been to, where it was all about, you know, just come on in and, you know, watch a video and who knows what else. I mean, I don't know. But I just think it's something that's kind of lost on us.
Yeah, I think exactly right. And I think especially in America, where we're very individualistic. We emphasize the individual over and against the corporate, but when we look at scripture, even just thinking about what you were saying in terms of church discipline, you know, we look at places like Hebrews 13:17, which says, "Obey your leaders and submit to them, for they are keeping watch over your souls as those who will have to give an account." One of the things that we've had to consider is just what does it mean to take for elders to take that seriously? That there's a group of people that at the judgment seat of Christ they're going to have to give an account for. So you know, I also think about how in Ephesians chapter 3 it says that it's through the church that the manifold wisdom of God is being made known, and so the local church is God's. It's the way that He is reaching the nations. It's the only institution, that's maybe other than marriage, that is continuing and progressing. All other things are eventually going to perish until the second coming of Christ, but the church will still be here. So it's very important in God's sight. So it should be important in our sight as well.
Yeah. What do you guys think the church in America needs to do better? Where are we failing, and what needs to be done about it?
Yeah, I would say the first thing more than anything. The church in America and really anywhere need to know our God, and that's something that sounds so basic. But I think that I think oftentimes who God is. Oftentimes we can be comfortable or satisfied in our lack of knowledge of God, not realizing that if we're not biblically literate, if we don't know God as He's revealed Himself in the Scriptures, what we'll do is we have a tendency to come up with our own ideas of who God is, which is idolatrous. And so I would say more than anything, the church needs to know God, who He really is as He's revealed Himself in the Scriptures. And secondly, I would also say, just a clear understanding of the gospel, and a realization that the gospel, Jesus Christ and Him crucified, risen and exalted, is not just something that gets us in to the Christian life, but you know, it's not just something to be used as an evangelistic tool, although we are to spread the gospel in evangelism, but the gospel is also for believers, so that it's not we get in by the gospel and then we continue in the Christian life in some other way, but rather it's the power of the gospel, the power of the cross, which is at work in the lives of believers as we live lives daily of repentance and faith in Jesus Christ. So I would say the greatest needs are knowledge of God and a true understanding and clarification of what the gospel is.
Yeah, no, that's good. I want to make sure I forgot to let folks know. I mean, you guys are on you're on Twitter and Facebook. People can find out more about you there. And also your label is Lamp Mode, lampmode.com, where the music is. And even apparel. Oh, my word. That's pretty awesome. I think I need to get one of those shirts. You know, my mom, everyone knows, my mom is 81 years old. I'm the youngest of six kids. And my mom loves wearing Christian T-shirts. So I think I'm going to, she uses them as witnessing tools. And the more hardcore, the better. So I think I'm going to have to go on and get a couple of your shirts for her. Because she, she points about, she was on our recent webcast and wore one that said, "Every knee shall bow." And it had the emblems of all the world religions. And she can just get up in people's faces because she's 81 and just, you know, looks cute. And then she's like, "Hey, listen." So she doesn't mess around. But I haven't fully gotten her to embrace hip hop yet. So she said I showed her a video once. I can't remember what. Oh, who was it? I think it was someone from Cross Movement, and she was like, "Why are they just jumping around like a bunch of pogo sticks?"
Wow. Wow.
I think I know what video that is.
It might have been. This is when I was trying to sell her on, you know, should I eventually take a hip hop and rap career, what her daughter would be doing. But yeah, so now what?
Print out the words for her next time.
I will. Yeah, I will. Oh, exactly. No, that's the kind of stuff she gets excited about. I mean, that it's right. Very. She would be all over that. So, now what? Okay, when you guys are not, you know, are not singing and rapping about nine marks of a healthy church and all this, what do you guys do for fun? Family stuff like that.
Yeah, I mean, I have a 4-month-old son now, so I try to spend as much time with him and my wife as possible. You know, but I'm involved in my church. You know, I got a job. Christian hip hop doesn't always pay that well. Regular old stuff. We're just like, you know, regular people. We got, you know, regular hobbies. You know, we enjoy music and, you know, so it's nothing too special for me anyway.
Yeah.
But
and I'm engaged to be married. So right now I'm in Hawaii at a conference, and I get back and I'll be married 8 days later. So my life up, you know, at this point is pretty much consumed with wedding planning.
Wow. So you guys are busy. That's good, though, because now we can, you know, we encourage people to move towards marriage biblically here at the Boundless Show. So that's good. So I don't have to give a smackdown to either of you guys because you're getting it done.
Yeah. We believe in courtship.
If I can also add, I think that I was actually on you guys' website and found a lot of material that helped me and my wife while we were still courting. So.
Oh, okay.
Testimonial.
All right.
Yeah. So it's definitely been, you know, you're what you guys are doing has definitely been a benefit to me personally. So it's dope to be able to, you know, contribute by being on the radio show.
Okay. Well, I am still single, so I need you to keep your eyes open for me. So I'm just saying to maybe send someone this way that is, you know, that
a hip hop dude.
Yeah.
Would you marry a hip hopper?
Yeah. Totally.
Okay.
I'm just I think, and this is why I'm saying you need to feature me on at least a song at some point. And I'm gonna be the white girl that's rapping, the girl that, you know, I mean I've got a little bit of cred from my Bay Area days, but now my family lives in northern Minnesota, so that doesn't really do much for me. But my mom's in a town of 177 people, a bunch of farmers. All right. Well, you guys are fantastic. I want to let everyone know. Okay, it is called The Church CD. You can actually download it. Go and check out the guys. Find them on Twitter and Facebook. And then lampmode.com is where you can get more info about the music. They have press information there, what they're doing, what's happening. what all the individual artists there are doing. And we'll have to stay in touch with you guys so we know what you guys have coming up in the future. But say hi to Mark for me and all the folks in your churches there in Philly. Tell Mark that I did join my church and it's going well. So
will do.
That's fun.
Thanks a lot, Lisa.
Thanks so much, you guys. That's Shylin and Stephen the Levite, y'all. So make sure you check out their music. And like I said, we will hear more from you guys in the future.
Thank you.
I'm starting over, completely over. I've had enough of this dissonance and pain. I've walked away with my head held straight, numb to the hum and the whispers of your grace.
We are opening up the inbox, and I have Candace on the phone. Hey, Candace.
Hi, Lisa.
Hello.
Good to hear your voice.
I know. Great to hear your voice. So, hey, we've got a good question this week, and it's kind of like it's interesting. And I've actually had a couple friends who've dealt with this too, so this is going to be interesting to see what you have to say. Basically, the summary of it is: how important is romance when considering marriage to a particular man?
Mm-hmm.
And the illustration that this girl gives, which I think is interesting, is she's actually engaged now. And so, but she is very disappointed in the proposal she got.
Oh.
So she basically said that she tried to drop hints about it. She had a very specific way that she wanted to be proposed to, kind of things that were very important to her. And she actually kind of told the guy not to rush into it because mm-hmm. he felt like, you know, she felt like he might. Well, then something like came up and he had some plans, but they got wrecked and whatever. So basically she was moving into a new apartment and just like while they're moving in, he stands there and like asks her to marry him. She's like, he didn't even get down on one knee. And, you know, and then finally she's like, aren't you even going to get down on one knee? And she finishes by saying, I know I should be thankful that I even have a boyfriend and that we're heading towards marriage. I should also be thankful that he does have all the wonderful characteristics that he does. But I am just left feeling empty when I think back to how he proposed. Am I making too much of a big deal out of whether or not there's romance in a relationship? How important is it that there are romantic moments in a marriage? Do I need to kiss my dream of romance goodbye or simply change my definition and examples of what I think is romantic?
Yeah, and the short answer is yes.
Okay.
You need to kiss your expectations goodbye, and you need to change your idea of what is romantic. This is such a great question, and it's classic, and I even have elements of these twinges myself when I look back on things that did or didn't happen when Steve and I got engaged. I think we have been so conditioned by Hollywood to expect an engagement to look a certain way, and even in the last 10 years since I got married, the stories of how people get engaged have gotten so elaborate that just a guy with a ring in his back pocket who gets down on one knee can seem so anticlimactic, and then he's labeled unromantic. And, you know, it's this black eye of an engagement story that you don't want to share with anyone.
Mm-hmm.
I think that how you react to something is totally within your control. How he proposes is totally out of your control. And so she's really got to pray for the grace and the maturity to appreciate what he did do. I have a really good friend who was dating a guy, and when he was the weekend that he was ready to propose to her, he had this whole elaborate plan worked out. The day before that, they were at his apartment, and I think they had just had dinner, and he had gone to get some laundry from the laundry room, you know, in the apartment complex and brought it up, and she was helping him fold towels, and he was just so overcome with his love for her and his desire to spend the rest of his life for her that he couldn't wait, and so he pulled the box out, the ring box, and proposed right then and there in a T-shirt and jeans while she's folding his towels. I mean, talk about unromantic. And he undid all these elaborate plans he had, and yet she was so excited about that because she, too, realized that the whole point was to start, you know, the next phase, which is engagement leading toward marriage. And so I just loved the way that she responded to him. It was such a gracious way. It was such, she was so thoroughly and truly excited, genuinely excited to be engaged to him, and that's what she focused on. And so this gal really can control what, where she puts her focus.
Mm-hmm.
Having said that, I think it's fine for her to communicate her needs to her fiancé, to say, you know, there are things that really speak to me of your love. When you do X, Y, and Z, whether it's bringing me flowers or, you know, making me a special music mix for my iPod or writing me a card, that she needs to tell him that and give him the opportunity to meet her needs in the way that are meaningful to her. And, you know, I've done things like that with Steve. Again, when we were dating, I remember once saying, hey, I do all the card writing in our relationship, and it would mean so much to me if you would leave me a card.
Mm-hmm.
Well, he did the next day, and I thought, oh, great, he did it because I asked. You know, I mean, I finally got what I wanted, and then I wasn't sure it was good enough. So I think we just have to really extend grace. And if this is, if this relationship is really a solid one and marriage is in their future together, you got to change your expectations, and you've also got to be able to communicate about what you need and then have grace for what your fiancé is able to provide.
Yeah. Well, I think what really helps with the towel folding story is that the fact that he was proposing because he couldn't wait to propose.
Yeah.
I mean, communicating that is extremely helpful. It's not just like, let's get this over with because I don't want to stand around with this ring in my pocket. You know, I mean, that covers a multitude of sins, that kind of thing.
Yeah.
I think that there's so much pressure because, you know, you get between, you know, having to get the ring. And then, of course, the woman has to run out and get a manicure because you can't show people your ring unless you have your nails done. And then you have to have, you know, everyone wants to hear the story, you know, and now you practically have to publish it as a note on Facebook and make a big deal about it and see if you want to get a publisher and write a book out of it, you know, or something. So it does. It becomes this thing that all of a sudden isn't about just the couple involved. It becomes this big, you know, community project that's just weird.
You know, it wasn't always that way.
Yeah. No.
I did not have a manicure the day Steve proposed.
Right.
I actually didn't even get a manicure for our wedding. I painted my own nails.
Wow.
So I'm just saying, you don't have to go that route. And if I had this gal in my kitchen for coffee, I would say to her, you are right to think to yourself, I need to focus on what I do have. That is where you need to put your focus.
Sure.
And be grateful. Cultivate that spirit of gratitude for what God is giving you.
Mm-hmm.
And don't let the enemy rob you of your joy during this incredibly joyful time simply because it didn't follow the script that you had in your head that may or may not have even been reality.
Right. Yeah. And I would just add, I would just tell her that there will be things about this guy that you will see that will, you know, reflect romance and that will, I mean, if this guy has got awesome qualities, those will easily trump ultimately what became a proposal story, you know?
Yeah, but, you know, Lisa, on the other hand, not every guy is romantic. It's certainly not in the way Hollywood defines it.
Right, right.
And so she should really quickly, you know, assess, can I live with him if he never does become what I want him to become? If he doesn't change in this area, am I okay with that?
Sure, sure. Well, and they're now engaged, so hopefully she's worked through some of that.
Yeah.
So,
well, premarital counseling never hurt anybody.
Yeah. Woohoo! And there's no, and it's not to say that he can't take a few cues too and say, you know what,
right,
maybe I will do X, Y, and Z, and I'll remember that. And there's nothing wrong with, you know, I hate it when women then put on guys, you know, well, and don't make it formulaic. Well, you know what? Maybe they need to because
maybe they don't know any. Maybe they just don't know how to do what you see in your head.
You're exactly, and they want to. They just need some tips. There's nothing wrong with that. So. Well, good. Well, thank you, Candace, for weighing in on that.
Oh, you're welcome. It's always a pleasure, Lisa.
Okay. Write to us, folks, at editor@bellness.org so we can get your questions and answer them throughout the rest of the summer. We always want to hear from you because real life is where it's at, and we want to help you guys walk through it and get some good biblical advice and practical advice to help you navigate that. So that is it for this week's show. We love to have you as part of our family, so listen in. Until next week, I'm your host, Lisa Anderson, for The Boundless Show.
The Boundless Show is a production of Boundless.org. Focus on the family.